Voice of Indonesia.
Hello listeners, how are you today? I hope that you are fine for this Friday, 8 February 2019, and you are in a good condition. And with me, Ahmad Faisal, I'm also fine. We would like to accompany you 60 minutes ahead for some programs that we can give to you listeners, and also news, and also commentary, as well as entertainment and Indonesian pop songs. Well, listeners, we begin our program with news. So stay with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, at frequency SW3325 kHz, and website www.voinews.id.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news, first the headlines. Indonesian President urged all eligible voters to come to polling stations. 14 MICTA meeting discuss handling of global issues. Those are the headlines. Now the news in detail. I'm Dalat Pane. Indonesian President Joko Widodo called on eligible voters to come to the polling booths in their respective neighborhoods to exercise their political rights on April 17, 2019. President Jokowi stated while addressing attendees of a Chinese New Year celebration on Thursday that the eligible voters' voices will determine the nation's future. Hence, they are expected to visit polling stations, while the military and police personnel are expected to secure the safety of all looking to cast their votes. In response to the president's calls, the event's organizing committee chairman, Sudamek Agung Waspodo Sunjoyo, urged all Chinese community members in Indonesia who were eligible to vote to come to the polling booths. The 14th meeting of an informal partnership between Mexico, Indonesia, South Korea, Turkey, and Australia, MICTA, held in Yogyakarta on Thursday, discussed the strength and the commitment of member states to contribute to addressing various global issues. The issues discussed at the closed-door meeting included the attainment of Development Agenda 2030, strengthening of multilateral partnership, counter-terrorism, Korean Peninsula issue, and the global cooperation related to the migration. The 14th MICTA meeting brought together Indonesian Vice Foreign Minister I.M. Fakir, Mexican Vice Foreign Minister Julian Ventura Valero, South Korean Vice Foreign Minister Tae Ho Lee, Turkish Vice Foreign Minister Faruk Kaymachi, and Deputy for Multilateral Policies at the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade Justin Lee. Fakir led the meeting held under a head of delegation plus two semi-officials format. The meeting marked the conclusion of Indonesia's chairmanship of MICTA 2018. Mexico will later take up the post of MICTA coordinator in 2019. He also highlighted the development of MICTA activities under the leadership of Indonesia and the results of international meetings held in the country. Indonesia's Research, Technology and Higher Education Ministry is collaborating with the United Kingdom Department of Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy through the New Town Fund, funded three studies in the field of hydrometeorology for the 2019 to 2021 period. Minister of Research, Technology and Higher Education, Muhammad Nasir, stated at the launching of their research cooperation on Thursday that there were three elected proposals jointly funded with a total fund of 31 billion rupees over a period of 3 years. The three studies were selected from 23 research proposals assessed by the Indonesian and British parties. The selection process for research is conducted in an open, transparent, and competitive manner. Nasir remarked that under the research collaboration, Indonesian and British scientists will collaborate in high-standard research that aims to produce a breakthrough in the field of disaster intervention, especially in understanding the impacts of land and water-related disasters. Results of the collaboration will increase Indonesia's resilience and readiness to deal with climate change, including through effective disaster policy and communication interventions. Indonesia and European Union held the 9th meeting of the Working Group on Trade and Investment, WGTI, in Brussels, Belgium, to discuss the latest issues in the field of trade and investment. Director General of Trade Negotiations at the Indonesian Trade Ministry, Imam Pambagio, noted in a written statement released on Thursday that the WGTI meeting discussed a wide range of technical issues related to the implementation of policies that need special attention from both sides to encourage smooth business and investment. He affirmed, although not all these issues could be resolved, the two sides were at least able to exchange information to find a common solution. Pambagio, who led the Indonesian delegation to the meeting, expressed hope that the forum would support the ongoing negotiations on the Indonesia-European Union Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, CEPA. One of the issues that Indonesia raised at the meeting was its palm oil access to the European market. The European Union Parliament's decision to stop the contribution of palm oil-based biofuel in the update of the Renewable Energy Directive has raised serious concern among and sparked strong reaction from stakeholders in Indonesia. This news comes to you over the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Oxford University Master's candidate Billy Mambrasa said the Indonesian education system needs to be further contextualized. In an interview with Voice of Indonesia at the Daya Dimensi offices in Jakarta on Thursday, he said, one centralized curriculum cannot be relevant to all Indonesian children living across 17,000 islands with a broad range of cultural backgrounds.
What's happening right now when you have the textbooks coming from Central Jakarta, Central Papua, talking about biology and the plants that was used as an example there is rice. And what's happening in Papua is the staple of Papuan people are not rice. So when you're talking about rice in that biology books, try to explain the concept to them in which they cannot contextualize and relate with the examples that you set on the books. It's very hard for them to, you know, understand.
Mambrasa, the CEO of the Kitong Bisa Learning Centers operating in East Indonesia and Vietnam, added, the program works to complement the state schooling system to ensure Indonesian children learn skills in critical thinking, problem solving, and entrepreneurial thinking.
I want Indonesian youth to be problem solver. So I want the curriculum to emphasize less on memorizing and winning the exams. I want them to be more real problem solver. You know, stuff like things that they can do in the real life and show that they have life skill to solve the problem in the community. You know.
Mambrasa is working with the Ministry of Education and Culture to improve education in Indonesia. Mayors, key to improving water sanitation conditions across Indonesia, said Food Bustuan, the Technical and Institutional Development Advisor for USAID at a press conference in Jakarta on February 8. City mayors and other stakeholders met at the Ambara Hotel to discuss plans for the future. He said there are now 86 cities where there is an operator set up to help with what it called an on-site system. He added, since last year, his party has invited members and cities which do not yet have a sewage system but are very critical to improve sanitation in their cities. Surakarta's mayor, Francis Xavier Hadi Ruyatmo, has been key implementing the U.S. aid sanitation program in his city. Mr. Bustuan said his success will encourage other mayors to adopt better sanitation practices in their cities. He said it doesn't cost the government money because they can do it cost efficiently. So the people do not complain and they pay something for the thing on a regular basis. The Communication and Informatics Ministry has shut down a fake Instagram account illegally using the name of the Indonesian Defense Forces, whose contents threatened leftists. The fake Instagram account was called @TNI_Indonesia_update. The ministry revealed in its press statement made available to Antara on Thursday. The fake social media account proliferated hate speeches and threats that the account creator would cross leftists with critical thoughts and those alleged to be members of the new generation of the banned Indonesian Communist Party. The Indonesian Army spokesman Brigadier General Chandra Wijaya told the Communication and Informatics Ministry's officials that the Instagram account of @TNI_Indonesia_update did not belong to the Indonesian Army. The Army's official Instagram account is @TNI_angkatan_darat. Regarding this issue, the military headquarters had officially asked the ministry to take down all social media accounts illegally using the name of the Indonesian Armed Forces on Wednesday. Well, listener, that was the news.
Voice of Indonesia.
Hello, listener. Nice to be with you again in our regular program commentary. The topic of today's commentaries is Vietnam to host second meeting between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. The puzzle of which country is going to host the second meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is finally solved after President Donald Trump delivered his State of the Union address on February 5th. Earlier in an interview with the media, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo didn't explicitly state in which country in Asia the meeting will take place. Yet in his speech, President Trump announced the meeting is to be held in Vietnam on February 27 until 28. In fact, rumors have indeed been circulating that Vietnam is to be the host of the meeting. But why Vietnam? There are some possible reasons. First, the distance from North Korea to Vietnam can be reached by Kim Jong-un's state aircraft in one trip. Second, both the U.S. and North Korea have diplomatic relations with Vietnam, so their embassies in Hanoi can support the preparation of the meeting. Late last month, North Korean negotiator Kim Yong-chol, who brought home a letter from Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, was satisfied with its content. Kim Jong-un has prepared for his second meeting with Donald Trump. An analyst argued that the reason that Vietnam is chosen as the venue for the meeting is that North Korea can learn from a fellow socialist country. Apart from the desire of the United States to make North Korea not only depends on China. Skeptics said that what was done at the first meeting was like a small talk because there was no follow-up after the meeting. The two parties do not have the same definition of denuclearization. The challenge in the second meeting is more difficult because the first meeting has not produced significant progress. Now both leaders must prove that the term denuclearization has the same meaning for both sides and can be immediately implemented. The world is watching closely to whether or not North Korea will take a comprehensive path like Vietnam and China that applies socialist ideology to free economy. It is a powerful prescription for the economic development of the two countries. Well, listener, that was commentary read by Rahmana. Thanks for listening.
Let's start today in history by reflecting on Port Arthur's Sea Battle, which occurred on February 8, 1904. Port Arthur's Sea Battle was the opening battle of the Russian-Japanese War. The fighting took place on February 8, 1904, with a sudden attack at the night by a Japanese destroyer squadron against the Russian fleet, which docked in Port Arthur, Manchuria, and continued with a major battle that following morning. The battle ended with no definite results, and small battles around Port Arthur continued until May 1904. We turn to another historical event, that the first electronic stock exchange, Nasdaq, was opened in the United States on February 8, 1971. The National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotations, Nasdaq, is a stock exchange operated by the National Association of Securities Dealers. When starting trading on February 8, 1971, Nasdaq was the first electronic stock exchange in the world. Since 1999, Nasdaq is the largest stock exchange in America. To end our Today in History segment, let's remember the day the announcement of ceasefire between Israel-Palestine on February 8, 2005. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon in Egypt's Sharm el-Sheikh resort on February 8, 2005 announced a ceasefire to end 4 years of violence in the Middle East. Abbas said the ceasefire would lead to a new era of peace and hope. Meanwhile, Sharon vowed to stop military action against Palestinian targets after militant groups stopped the violence. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said this was the best opportunity for peace. But Sharon and Abbas did not sign a formal ceasefire agreement. Their negotiations covered very broad issues, including an agreement on the release of Palestinian prisoners and the surrender of the West Bank cities to the Palestinian control. The meeting at the Egyptian resort of Sharm el-Sheikh was a high-level discussion between the two sides since the Palestinian Intifada began more than 4 years earlier. That was Today in History.
Voice of Indonesia.
Padanya ilahi.
Listeners, that's the song entitled Pasrah by Ermi Kulit. You are still with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, at frequency SW3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. In today's edition, I would like to give you information about My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, welcome to My Indonesia. Today's topic titled Indonesia and Switzerland Sign Mutual Legal Assistance Agreement. Minister of Law and Human Rights Yasona Lawli signed the Mutual Legal Assistance Agreement, or MLA, with Swiss Justice Minister Karin Keller-Sutter at Bern of Bern, Switzerland, on Monday, February 4. The press release of the Indonesian Embassy in Bern, released by the Antara News Agency in Jakarta on Tuesday, February 8, mentioned that the signing of the agreement between going through two rounds of negotiations, namely in Bali in 2015 and in Bern, Switzerland in 2017. The agreement was also marked the success of Indonesian diplomacy in Switzerland in the field of law. She explained the agreement, which consisted of 39 articles, included regulating legal assistance regarding tracking, freezing, confiscation and seizure of assets resulting from crime. Minister Yasona explained MLA agreements can be used to fight crime in the field of taxation or tax fraud. According to Minister Yasona Lawli, the agreement is part of the Indonesian government's effort to ensure that Indonesian citizens or legal entities comply with Indonesian tax regulation and do not commit tax evasion or other tax crimes. The minister also said, at the Indonesian suggestion, the agreement adheres to the retroactive principle. According to the minister, this principle allows to reach criminal acts that have been committed before the entry into force of the agreement, as long as the court decision has not been implemented. The Indonesian ambassador to Bern, Mulyaman D. Haddad, who accompanied Minister Yasona Lawli at the signing ceremony, stated that the Indonesia-Swiss Mutual Legal Assistance Agreement was a remarkable achievement of mutual reciprocal assistance cooperation. Ambassador Mulyaman added that the signing of the MLA fulfilled the success of the Indonesia-Switzerland bilateral cooperation in the economic, social, and cultural fields, which had been well established. The signing of the MLA agreement is in line with the President Joko Widodo's Nawacita program. Among them was the commemoration of the World Anti-Corruption Day in 2018, in which the president emphasized the importance of this agreement as a platform for legal cooperation, especially in the government's effort to eradicate corruption and return assets resulting from corruption. Previously, Indonesian government has also signed MLA agreement with ASEAN member countries Australia, Hong Kong, China, South Korea, India, Vietnam, United Arab Emirates, and Iran. That was My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Cinta yang lain, hati hatiku terbuka hanya untukmu. Duhai cinta, enggan menawar rasa. Gelombang maramu terlalu berlebih. Berderit-derit bunyi jantungku bila ku kenang wajahmu. Biar jauh jarak pandang kita, namun hati dan jiwaku selalu merasa di sisi.
Listeners, that's the song entitled Ratusan Purnama by Melly Guslau featuring Martino Leo. You are still with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency SW3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. Listeners, we would like to present next segment, Indonesian Wonder. And it is about tourism and local wisdom of Indonesia. Listeners, in today's Indonesian Wonder, we will introduce you Serambang Park. Stay with us, Voice of Indonesia, on www.voinews.id, or you can also hear through frequency 3325 kHz. Director of Operation of Perum Perhutani Hari Priyanto and Regent of Ngawi Regency Budi Sulistiono handed over the Certificate of Standardization for the Natural Tourism Management Canopy in 2018 to each person in charge of 7 tourism locations that have been standardized. They are Kawah Putih, Cikole, Curug, Cilember, Puncak Bintang, Guci Asyavana, Serambang Park, and Tanjung Papuma. The submission of the certificate is a follow-up to the implementation of Canopy, which was held on November 11, 2017. Canopy is a brand or identity that is responsible in the various characters of Perhutani's natural tourism with guaranteed professional and quality product standards, services, and management. This is management's commitment to continuously improve the quality of natural tourism products and services. Canopy standard location offers a pleasant, clean, and adventurous travel experience. Fresh, fun, and adventure. Well, listeners, today's edition of Indonesian Wonder introduce you one of the 7 tourism destinations that obtains canopy certificate, namely Serambang Park. Being in the middle of the Jogoro forest area, the northeast slope of Mount Lawu, and visiting the area, you are served not only with natural beauty, but also green forest, fresh river water, waterfall, and the cool mountain air can also be felt here. This tourism destination can be reached from downtown Ngawi with a distance of 30 kilometers with a travel time of 52 minutes by motor vehicle. Serambangan Park is open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. To enter here, you must pay an entrance ticket, 15,000 rupiah per person. Listeners, when you enter this tourism area, you will feel the fresh air and hear the chirping of birds. While traveling to Serambang Park, you should visit waterfall, because the waterfall is indeed a major tourism attraction. In the waterfall, you can soak to enjoy the freshness of the water. You can also take a walk to feel the beauty of this tourism attraction. Don't forget to take a photo at the available photo spots. There are various Instagrammable photo spots in Serambang Park, such as tulisan Serambang Park Ngawi, deretan puluhan payung berwarna-warni, sky tree, various entrance decorations to tourism destination, tree house bridge, and frame love. Listeners, tourism destination Serambang Park has been completed with various facilities such as a large parking area, restaurants, bathrooms, gazebos, and places of worship. For those who want to travel here, it's better to bring an umbrella or raincoat. This is important because it often rains in December and January. Moreover, this destination is in the mountain, which is a catchment area for keeping rain drops. For those who want to stay overnight, you can stay at various hotels that are available nearby at this tourism location, or you can also homestay. Listener, that's Indonesian Wonder for today's edition about Serambang Park. We will meet in another interesting topic for another edition. Bye bye.
Voice of Indonesia.
Apa mungkin kita bersatu?
Listeners, you have already listened music from Armada with title Katakan Sejujurnya. You are still with us, Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world at frequency SW3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. Listeners, we would like to give you another information about interesting tourism that happens in Indonesia.
Listeners, in today's miscellany for today, we will inform you about the exciting Jogja Festival. The Yogyakarta Provincial Government held an exciting Jogja Festival to attract tourists throughout February. Some of the benefits that can be enjoyed from this event include discounts on train tickets to Yogyakarta, price discounts when staying at hotels, and various lucrative shopping promos. There are also various cultural attractions that can be enjoyed while relaxing to enjoy the atmosphere. The Jogja Festival is also inseparable from culinary tourism, angkringan stalls that serve cheap and delicious foods to the typical Yogyakarta souvenir center, such as bakpia, are the target of tourists. 1,000 angkringan and jumputan on the street become part of the Jogja Festival. The organizing of the festival involved the angkringan business people who had been the icons of cheap food for the people. This event is combined with a batik exhibition. The location is in the annual village of the city of Yogyakarta, precisely along the Kali Manunggal Road from 9 to 10 February 2019. Besides angkringan to introduce the taste of Indonesian specialty coffee in the eyes of the world, the Jogja Coffee Festival is targeting to present a number of farmers and coffee products from a number of cities in Indonesia. The coffee festival will provide special ingredients for making coffee and taste trials. You can find this festival at North Jogja Square on February 28, 2019. On Sunday, February 10, 2019, the 1000 Sarong Fashion Show will be held along Malioboro Street. The event is enlivened by around 500 performers and will present various styles of sarongs. This event is held to lift the image of the sarong to a higher level so that it can be brought to the global market. Towards the closure of the exciting Jogja Festival, there will be a cultural attraction called Kenduri Bakpia, which will be held on February 28, 2019. The artisans will make the largest diameter bakpia. It is planned that this bakpia feast will be paraded in the North Square of Yogyakarta and registered in a Muri record. That was miscellany for today with the topic The Exciting Jogja Festival. Thanks for listening.
Voice of Indonesia.
Hati lebih dari yang ku miliki. Selalu ada waktuku bila untuk dirimu, menemani hari-harimu. Tiada pernah letihku mengungkapkan rasaku. Tetaplah bersama. Rasaku tetaplah bersama.
Voice of Indonesia.
seumur hidupku, selamanya, setia menanti, walau di hati saja.
Voice of Indonesia.
You are still with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency SW3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. Well, listeners, next segment we would like to give you information about music.
Voice of Indonesia.
A song that was composed by Tia Ramon was popularized by a singer from Minang, Ali Kasim, in 1980. The Abid song is accompaniment song of Badinding dance or Indang dance from West Sumatra. The word of Indang itself is the name of instrument like tambourine. Indang dance is energetic and young dance. Badinding song with Malay rhythm is very suitable to become the accompaniment song. Meaning of the lyrics is full of deep messages to protect Minang culture. Most of the lyrics tell about Indang dance, that is dance of heart treatment. Indang dance was earlier used as preaching media. By the time passed by, the dance also functions as entertainment. The song lyrics of Badindin use rhymed. Listeners, here is Badindin song.
Balari lari bukannya kijang pandan tajamu adimu warongo. Ampun jemaah, oi kami puhunkan pada dun sana ale dan tiboy. Sambillah salam, oi kami ucapkan, kami bainang dan muda-muda.
Dan mula indang kaditarikan salam bajawe mengganti badan.
Listeners, this is the right time for us to end our show and also our togetherness in English language program broadcasting. Thank you for your kind attention and time to listen to our program, and we will give you another interesting information. So stay with us at Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, at frequency SW3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. Listeners, don't forget to like and comment at Facebook, The Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, Instagram, voice.of.indonesia, Twitter, @voindonesia, and email voi@voinews.id.